97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I want to compliment your show on how fair and level-headed everything you guys talk about.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
Maybe what we need from a conservative standpoint is...
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I respect that. We don't agree. Listen to both sides.
This...
Let's get it on.
...is the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Biden's gonna win. He's got cool sunglasses, aviators, just like Steve McQueen. He's on fire in fuego. Everyone else is at the kiddie table. Biden's got this in the bag. That was their view. And then Biden started running, which meant talking. Not the usual paid speeches to investor conferences in Dubai, but actual in-person campaign events where there's no teleprompter and people can ask you whatever they want. Things quickly collapsed.
Corn Pop is a bad dude. Yeah, I think Tucker's onto something there. Joe Biden seemed like the perfect candidate till he started talking. It's probably why Barack Obama didn't, that discouraged him from running, don't you think?
And has yet to endorse him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's got something to do. I think the same thing's going to happen with Bloomberg. That's my sneaking suspicion.
So there's kind of like a surge here and it's going to like kind of disappear?
Well, no, I think that. I think that these ad agencies are so good that you could bundle up a pile of cat poop and make it sound good if you let them have enough time and spend enough money on an ad. But when you have to see that person standing on a stage speaking in person, mm-hmm. it's a whole different ball of wax. When they see Michael Bloomberg, who's a rather annoying little character, he's not going to fare well as well as he does with this ad blitz. And again, in the end, it may get him to the nomination, for all I know. But I don't think he won't.
And by little, you mean the guy that needs a box to stand on for the debate?
Well, just I shouldn't make fun of his size. He's diminutive in nature, but he's just annoying to me. Every time I thought he was the mayor of New York.
He's not Joe Biden. He's not senile.
But he's old. Like Joe Biden.
So is Donald Trump.
But
you're going to have two old, rich, white guys up there.
Trump doesn't seem old. He's 71 years old. He's like the Energizer Bunny. Have you ever seen him slow down? I'm just saying.
Physically, he looks better.
I
agree with you that the president looks better physically.
I don't
than
think
the two
in
of them
person
in
Bloomberg will do nearly as well as the ads portray him. So we'll see.
But
we'll
think the ads are effective. I mean, if you were just watching the ads, you would like them.
Yeah,
they're good. They're good ads again, but he does have the money to spend on them.
the dude has spent $300 million to this point in the campaign. That's the total amount Donald Trump spent on his election campaign in 2016.
I think the campaign alone has aged Joe Biden's face. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like seeing pictures of him lately, I'm like, wow, he's kind of looks like he's been the president, because the presidency tends to age people in those 4 years like 10 years. And yes. Joe Biden is looking a little old.
Yep. He's not wearing well on him. We'll see what happens. The initial votes from New Hampshire, if you're just waking up this morning, you missed the news there at the top of the hour. Little Dixville, wherever that is, they voted. There were only five people voted.
Yeah.
And three of them voted for Bloomberg, write-in candidate. One each for Biden, one for Buttigieg, mm-hmm. of the five votes.
Mm-hmm.
So Bloomberg's not even on the ballot in New Hampshire, just so you know. So we're going to keep up coverage of this, and we'll continue it through this evening. In fact, the vote goes on all day long when it wraps up at some point, and we'll have a combination of Fox News coverage later, and I believe our friend Tony Colombo's coming in, right?
I don't know that for a fact. I do know that we will have live coverage
of
some sort.
All right. Don't want to lead you astray. We're going to have all the results for you here on FM News Talk. So just stay tuned.
That is
right?
a fact.
Yeah,
we will have
you
covered in some way, shape, or form.
You will be covered if you're right here. Do you want to make sure that you're covered? That's a good thing. I can't believe this year has slipped by. It's February 11th already.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know what you can do for Valentine's Day this year? I just found this. It doesn't affect me as a many years happily married man. But there is a zoo. Your daughter will like this, Denise.
Okay.
There's a zoo in San Antonio that will name a rat after your ex
oh, I saw
and
that.
Feed it to a snake on February 14th.
You can send the snake to me, or the rat the to rat. Me. We'll, we can feed our snake with it.
Your snake is eating mice, not rats. Rats are
not
big.
Yet. Yeah, we're not to the rat stage yet, but we have gone up in mouse size.
Okay. I
that
see that.
That is atrociously morbid.
So $25, it's a fundraiser for the zoo. Or for $5, you can just name a cockroach after your ex. And the zoo will feed it to a bird.
I just don't name your food. Would you guys name the pigs and cows you're eating? I wouldn't name a chicken it before I ate it.
I don't care.
That is morbid.
Really?
Awful promotion. Yes.
I remember my...
I understand the circle of life that snakes need to eat rats, but... Like, I don't want the rat to be named Sally before.
I remember.
Yeah, we have never done that. Mia does not name the mice before she gives them to Lainey.
No, you have to. Oh, that's a
bad
idea.
Kids have got to learn. Like, my mom had a pet pig when she was growing up. I'll never forget this story. And all of a sudden, her brothers told her the pig had run away. And about a week later, they were eating ham for dinner. Mm-hmm. And at some point it dawned on her that the pig never ran away. So it did have a name. Her food had a name at some point, mm-hmm. but it is food.
And that probably made that meal less enjoyable. And it makes that situation morbid.
Why do I feel like I'm talking to Joaquin Phoenix here or something? Like
oh,
cows.
With the cow's milk.
Remember the story of the bite yesterday with the milk? We raise cows for
yes,
their,
I just don't know how that this.
Because we name our food. That's what I'm saying. He doesn't like the fact
but
that
why?
Bessie, the cow, that we have to take steal her milk from the little baby that was separated from her and then put it in our coffee.
No, I remember.
I thought about that as I put some milk in my coffee this morning.
I'm not Joe Biden. I know what's going on. I just don't like this rat naming story.
All right. Tell you what, Chris Arps is coming up. He's got a new article in the Red State about what's going on in New Hampshire. We'll get to your phone calls.
The Mark Cox Shortlist. Brought to you by Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Call Eggers.com.
We can't take anything we receive from the Ukraine at face value.
When you're in the arena, you got to be ready to take a punch. You got to be ready to throw a punch.
I already have a dog.
Flip a coin. Flip a coin. Flip a coin. They're going to run your health care.
Would you legalize heroin? Don't make me be a jerk.
As a health care issue.
This is no longer Mayberry. You're in danger.
Wow.
Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man?
Chef!
Can you dig it?
Chris Arps, what's going on, my
good.
Friend?
Good, voice is strong this morning.
Chef! Chef!
Nice, you're feeling it. You're feeling it.
Some hot tea on the way
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I did.
Too much caffeine or what?
I had an Egg McMuffin. I think that helped.
An Egg McMuffin. Nice. Orange
juice.
Nice.
Hash browns.
I got some donuts over there because
no,
it's Sue's
with...
birthday. We've been
oh,
celebrating this
happy
morning.
Birthday,
yeah,
Sue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, anyway,
27.
Can have a donut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forever.
Yeah, it's forever.
Exactly. Exactly.
I can't see her there. She's behind the X.
Yeah, she's...
That means she can't talk.
She can't
right
talk
now.
To us at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Like when your wife puts the X up and you're
yeah,
not supposed to talk to her.
I should have known that.
You know you picked up on that,
I
right?
I see that on the garage sometimes when I come home. Big X.
Leave. Tie a yellow ribbon or something. I'll leave.
Yeah, exactly.
When you get home. That's funny. That's funny. So you're watching, you're paying a little attention to New Hampshire there,
I
huh?
am paying attention to New Hampshire. You know, Mark, I watch MSNBC and CNN, and I know I get a lot of flack from conservatives because, like, how can you watch that? But I'm telling you, man, they're in full panic mode. Chuck Todd, all of them. They're seeing Bernie Sanders surging. They know that that he can't win. Pete Buttigieg is in second. He probably won't do much better after South Carolina. He has no black support. They see Michael Bloomberg, the Democrat, turn Republican, turn independent, turn Democrat again, taking over their party with money. I don't know about you, but I don't see African-American, Black Lives Matter types voting for a stop and frisk billionaire.
No.
And I don't see Bernie's voters rallying around a billionaire. So they're just in a real world of hurt.
So I heard an interesting poll where they quizzed supporters of each candidate that if your candidate was to drop out, where would your support go? Not surprisingly, 60% of Warren's people would go to Sanders if she quit. What did surprise me, though, was among Biden voters, the largest chunk, 24% of the respondents said they would go to Bernie Sanders. That shocked me that there was that big of a percentage of people who now support Biden who would switch over to Bernie Sanders if he was to drop out of the race. Not Buttigieg. I mean, he got a few of them. Klobuchar got a few of them. The biggest chunk, according to that poll, would have gone to Sanders. That shocked me a little bit.
I think what they see is, at President Trump's rallies, there's thousands of people showing up. There's a bunch of energy. When you look at the other Democratic candidates, not so much. The only one that comes close to any type of energy is Bernie Sanders. So I think they're buying Bernie's campaign plan that he can get the millennials and the young people to motivate and come out and put him into the White House. I don't see that. Every Democrat and every Republican since time immemorial has said they can get the youth vote out.
Right.
And they never come out.
So I just want you to know, Chris has got an article on Red State called The Dark Horse Could Emerge from Tonight's New Hampshire Primary. Just want you to know I've been refreshing it every few minutes so mm-hmm. you can start trending on there.
Oh, appreciate that.
Just so you know. Yeah. Just so they think there are multiple clicks. But you should read the story. So is that your dark horse?
My dark horse is Amy Klobuchar. I think if you look at all the clowns that I just mentioned previously, you don't really have a chance. I think Klobuchar is really their best slim hope of trying to unify the base. She's a Midwestern senator. She says that she's a moderate. She's a female. Maybe she can get a suburban vote. She matches up with Trump. These other people, I just don't see how they're going to bring all these different factions together. And that's the Democrats' greatest weakness, is they're just totally divided.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. You mentioned this about Bloomberg earlier. I want to play this. I want you to give me your estimation on how much of an impact this has on Mike Bloomberg's candidacy when people in the African-American community, I'm sure the progressives released this, mm-hmm. when they hear this audio. The audio is not great, but listen to it here. Mike Bloomberg.
That's the money for a lot of cops in the street. Put those cops where the crime is, which means in the minority neighborhood. So it's one of the unintended consequences is people say, oh, my God, you are arresting kids for marijuana. They're all minorities. Yes. That's true. Why? Because we put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why do we do it? Because that's where all the crime is. And the way you get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them.
And that's only 5 years old. That's not like a long time ago. That interview is fairly recent. I just don't see him getting over that hurdle. He's spending a lot of money. He spent $275 million in ads. He's hiring a lot of staff. Here's a surprising poll. Joe Biden was polling at 49% nationally in the African-American community. That's dropped down to 27%. Guess
wow.
who's number two? Bloomberg at 22%, just 5 points behind him. So Mike Bloomberg's ads and the black community is really helping. I think with that segment, my age group and older may support him because they think he has a good chance at Trump. But I just don't see the Black Lives Matter
crowd
forgiving.
Well, you hear what he says there, and the way you get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them up against the wall and frisk them. Yeah. He's talking about minority communities. Mm-hmm. They go there because that's where the crime is. The thing about stop and frisk, from a Fourth Amendment point of view, I'm not crazy about the policy because it can be applied anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. It is effective for the same reason that when the police in the city of we're going to have to go to a break here, but when the police in the city of St. Louis stopped and to talk to the guy who was dealing drugs out of the front seat of his car with his kid in the back seat, and they ended up having to shoot him because he had a gun laying on his lap, and they got criticized by the prosecutor down here in the city. You can't stop the police from talking to people who are suspicious. So you can draw back too far from stop and frisk, in my opinion. There's got to be some middle ground there where you can go after people who look like they're in an area where they shouldn't be or might have a gun. You got to be able to do those things. We'll continue this conversation with Chris Arps when we come back. What say you? 314-241-9797.
The tragic fact is that often background checks just don't happen or they don't work. They often take place at gun shows where any criminal can buy a gun. Oh, they often don't take place at gun shows where any criminal can buy a gun.
That is Michael Bloomberg. That's all you need to remember. He is a gun-grabbing fanatic willing to lie about what goes on at gun shows to try to scare people. That's who Michael Bloomberg is. Now, Chris Arp's back in the studio here with me, along with Tricia and Denise. Let's get back to the stop and frisk issue real quick. I mean, I wanted to play that because that's who Michael Bloomberg is. But Michael Bloomberg oversaw New York at a time when crime was rampant, right? And he continued the stop and frisk policies after he became mayor because it worked. You can't ignore the fact that it works. You may not like the final outcome of it, but if your goal is to find criminals and criminal activity, you got to go where that's happening, and you want to get guns off the street. Those are the people that are carrying them are criminals, right?
It is. It's a fine line. I mean, if I'm walking down the street and I have a suit on and looking professional or whatever, and I'm an African-American in a bad neighborhood, am I going to get pulled over by the stop and frisk for the police? But if I have my pants are sagging and I'm kind of looking kind of like I'm wearing gang attire, does that warrant me being stopped and frisked?
I mean, well, I don't know. I'm not a police officer, and at some point, you're right. There's got to be a trade-off there at some point, because we know what we want, which is safe communities or a safe neighborhood or whatever, but we don't want the police to go in sometimes and do some of the things they need to do because we find it distasteful. Yeah. If there's crime, that ought to be a colorblind issue. I know it's not always. I'm not saying that it is. But the point here is that Bloomberg, as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, before he was running for president, was all in for that kind of thing. Now he claims he realizes it was a mistake.
We're just in a overwoke culture now where we're trying to make sure that we protect people's citizenship or their rights. And it's kind of like the same thing where if a Border Patrol agent, a police officer sees a person of looks like they're Hispanic, speaks absolutely no English, has no ID whatsoever, but you're assuming that they're illegal, and if you arrest them, you know, some of the activists will have a problem with that when all the signs kind of point to this person's probably not here legally.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Profiling in and of itself is not a bad thing. When you hear about a cop going up I-44 and busting somebody with $10 million worth of cocaine in the trunk of their car, they didn't just randomly find that in a traffic stop. That's not how that works. They're profiling and looking for certain things to pull over certain cars. There's no way around it.
Like a headlight that's out.
Maybe it's a young Hispanic individual driving a car with Arizona license plates or New York license plates coming up I-44 from the southwest.
But if you're not committing a crime or any moving violation or anything, I mean, should you be stopped just because you fit a profile?
I'm sure they've come up with creative reasons for that stop. But at the end of the day, I'm glad the $10 million worth of fentanyl is off the street and not poisoning children somewhere. All I'm saying is that profiling works. Maybe distasteful to people, but you can't ignore the fact that it works sometimes. Yeah. Let me get to a Mike here on line two. Mike, what say you?
I just want to say I think that the debacle that happened in Iowa is allowing the growth of the weeds of opinion in the public sphere. I think that a lot of people are prematurely undercutting Biden. And like the gentleman said before, like once we get to South Carolina and Nevada, we're going to see where rubber meets the road, and I think we're all headed for a contested convention ultimately, and I think Bloomberg is the best voice to take advantage of all that.
Yeah, well, he's positioned well because he's been able to stay out of the fray so far, right, and just run positive ads about himself.
Yeah, well, and nobody's taking him serious, just like they didn't take Trump serious. He's got a lot of smart analytics. I'm not for him, but personally, I think that he's the most strategic thinker on the stage.
But how does he get the Bernie voters, who Bernie's whole shtick is the billionaire class and taking money from the billionaires? How does he get those hardcore people where the real energy of the Democratic base is right now? How does he get those people supporting him?
He doesn't care about those people because he doesn't need to unify the Bernie people. The Bernie people are in or out whether Bernie's in there or not. And he doesn't care about that. He's going to drive hard and recreate a classic Democrat tent and try to fold as many people as he can underneath that big tent. He doesn't care about the Bernie people, and you probably don't need the Bernie people to win. If the Democrats are right and they say that there's more Democrats than Republicans, then he's gonna put a lot of money in the voter turnout.
I've never in my life seen a divided party without any energy win a presidential
Maybe
election.
Mike, thank you for the phone call. I disagree with Mike is that he doesn't need the Bernie people.
Yeah,
that was one of Hillary's problems in 2016.
Exactly.
Those young, passionate Bernie people did not turn out for Hillary because they felt like he'd been screwed over in the primary process.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to energize some of those folks at some point to win. And again, it's not a popularity contest, Nishu. It's not a general popularity contest because Hillary Clinton got more votes in liberal New York and liberal California. But all that matters is the Electoral College,
exactly,
which is how the founders wisely set it up so that we're not run by the population centers on each coast. They saw that much more clearly than our liberal friends today do, clearly. Steve, good morning to you. What's going on?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good.
Hey, can I say something real quick first about the school thing that's going on tonight?
Oh, yes.
If they pass this, my suggestion to everybody would be go ahead and sign a name on there, and I'll give you a name to put on. Nunya Business.
Yeah, exactly.
And sign that.
Steve's talking about a thing that's supposed to be voted on by the St. Louis Public Schools tonight, where they would send home a form with every student and require every parent to sign it and send it back, pledging that they were going to lock their guns up or that they had guns and they'd lock them up or something like that. They have to send the form back into school.
You know who came up with that idea originally?
I do not.
That's Maria Chappelle Nadal, when she was a U City school board member. That was her big.
Well, apparently the whole Moms Against Guns people have been pushing this nationwide. It's finally come to the St. Louis area and the St. Louis public schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes it better. Put Nanya Business - Jerk.
Well said, Steve. You got anything else?
Yeah, what I actually called for over the weekend, I had to run north and. Obviously, there's no good radio stations further north. So I'm flipping through, and an NPR thing was on there. And this Amy Kennedy, who's the executive director of the New Hampshire primary thing up there.
Yes.
She was saying that people that come in and vote independently for a Democrat, they are switching their affiliation to be Democrat without their knowledge. Now, where I see this being a problem is, should New Hampshire become a close primary state, there's stuff in there are votes, basically, from people that don't necessarily reflect being Democrat or Republican,
right.
But they're taking away their opportunity to vote by doing this.
Well, if it's true, I'll have to look into it. Yeah, I had not heard that, but I appreciate that. Hey, Steve, I got it.
Yes.
I got three words for you. Radio.com. And then you can listen to us all day long, brother.
I've tried that, but it keeps buffering going up
there. Oh, I'm sorry about that. All right, we'll work on that.
All
thanks
right,
for the call.
All right, no problem.
All right, see you later. Yeah,
you got to plug that beautiful rewind.
It's got a rewind function.
There you go.
That
you
is
can't believe
sweet.
The brilliance you just heard come out of Chris Arp's mouth. You can rewind it.
Yeah,
again,
it's true.
And again and again.
Again and again and again. Yeah.
I've done it.
We're going to get to a break here. We'll get to your phone calls, too. 314-241-9797.
And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight and then watch the hair come back up again. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Well, I hope you touch them and tell them how much you love them, too. But
at any rate, the fact is that I already forgot what the hell I was going to say.
But here's the point. You're saying things you do not know what you're talking about.
He's going to have to do two things.
That as science changes, we have to increase the capacity.
Whether it's Los Alamos or whether it's any other place in the country.
I know they call me Middle Class Joe.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier. You said you were, but you're...
That was some weird sh**.
Come on, pal. Give me a break, will you?
That's my favorite one.
Lying dog-faced
what is it?
Pony soldier.
Yeah, lying dog-faced pony soldier.
I've done some dumb things,
and I'll do dumb things again.
Yeah, that's a younger sounding Joe Biden. That was back in the late 80s when he was running for president and was discovered that he had plagiarized a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he came out and admitted it, and then he resigned. He withdrew from the race, and then he made that statement.
Mm-hmm. And then became the statesman that he is today.
Oh, he did. Yeah, yeah. He went to Washington and fixed all the problems.
Exactly.
No, I'm sorry. He didn't.
You know, he said something that to show you just how bad his candidacy was going when he was trying to tout himself over the weekend on the Sunday shows. He's saying that he ran President Obama's stimulus plan with no fraud or abuse or anything involved with it. He said that with a straight face. No fraud.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Fascinating. Did you read any of the president's budget proposal?
I did not. Just a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty.
Yeah, I did, because I put a story up on my Facebook page.
I think it's pretty interesting.
I asked a question.
I it's long overdue. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving him credit for this, because I think he should have done it much sooner. But this is one of the most refreshing approaches to the budget I've ever seen, because no other politician, because he's not, would have done what he presented to Congress. You go through page after page of this, and it says the name of the program, and it says eliminated, eliminated, eliminated. No government program that's ever been built is ever eliminated.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem. That's why our deficit is trillions and trillions of dollars. Because nobody in Washington, particularly the liberals, but also the Republicans to some extent, will ever have the guts to go back and reduce a single penny of federal money that's going into some program. Because they give them these great names like Heritage Partnership Program, mm-hmm. Centennial Challenge Fund, the Indian Guaranteed Loan Program, The National Wildlife Refugee Fund.
Is there a Chris Arts Fund in there?
The Geological Survey Ecosystems Research Fund. The president wants to reduce that fund, the Geological Survey Ecosystem, $252 million. He wants to reduce it to $127 million. Yeah. And they're going to scream and find some reason why you shouldn't do that, even though in every single one of these cases, they point out that most of these things are duplicate programs that get money from other places in the federal government already. This is unnecessary. They're finding ways to cut waste in our government, and it's dead on arrival when it gets to the House. People have got to remember that.
And what doesn't make sense to me is the Democrats are up in arms because the president is, quote-unquote, cutting safety programs, food stamps, and those of the like. And when your economy is at full employment and people, you don't have enough people to fill the jobs, why do you need more welfare program spending? I mean, you cut it if people don't need it, right? I mean, explain that to me, Mark.
So in HUD, they're going in and cutting about $1 billion, about $3 billion out of the HUD program. About $3 billion. And they point out that these reforms would reduce federal costs and put these programs on a more sustainable path, as well as promote self-sufficiency and provide an incentive for people to increase their earnings.
Why do you hate poor people?
You're such a political analyst. I'm telling you what. This is great. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
We do. All right. Have a great day, folks. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.